Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream.
Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
On the drive, kicks it out, Williams. Williams to the rack, high off the glass, it's good, he did it again.
SGA taking his time. Luke Dort has it. Dort
lines up. Three-pointer. Bang! Luke Dort from downtown.
Game one of the conference finals at Madison Square Garden. He can get hot.
Williams has been hot all night. Falling away. Got it! 40 points for Jalen Williams.
I just like listening to Mike Breen. Good job, Max, coming in. Mike Breen's as good as it gets. That broadcast, not so great, but Mike Breen is the best. Yeah, Jalen Williams last night had a night, as did Oklahoma City. They were just too much for the Pacers, especially considering Tyrese Halliburton played one of the worst games you'll ever see a star play in a spot like last night. Now, he did have an excuse. We'll get to that coming up. Good morning. Oklahoma City, one win away. Try to say that fast three times. One win away from an NBA championship. The last time that franchise won it all, they were the Seattle Supersonics, and they knocked out the Washington Bullets in five games. June of 1979. That would be 46 years ago. Look it up if you think I'm making it up. Yeah, Washington's NBA franchise played in the NBA Finals, Max, three times when they were in Washington in the 1970s. Of course, they have not been close since. I've got a ton on last night's game coming up, including thoughts on what Rick Carlisle should have done about Tyrese Halliburton last night. But this from Fran to start the show. Fran was very upset, and I'm not going to read the entire email. Fran was very upset that I went off yesterday on the city council. It wasn't just the city council. It was all of them. It was the mayor's office. It was the city council. It was get it together and get this thing done by July 15th so the team can proceed in the timely manner and based on the calendar that they wanted when they came to an agreement on a term sheet with Mayor Bowser. Fran writes, and I'm taking just a part of this, not sure why you took the side of Commanders ownership yesterday while being uber critical of the city council. These are very complex negotiations, and time is necessary. I don't care how long it takes. I just want them to get it right. Be patient. Well, thank you for that, Fran. I want them to get it right, too. I do. I want them to get it right. I want them to get the best possible deal for the city because I'm a resident of the District of Columbia, and that's their job, you know, to do what's in the best interest of their constituents, do what's best for the people. And I understand that these are complex negotiations. You know, I don't know where to compare the complex negotiations of putting together a stadium/city deal versus some other complex negotiations, like perhaps the ones that were going on for 60 days with Iran. I don't know. I just know that when they struck the deal, there was one job left, and that was for the city council to vote on it and to pass it by July 15th. Now, if they don't pass it, they don't pass it, and the team moves on. You know, if they get a deal that, or if they are unable to get a deal that the city council can vote 7 votes out of the 13 council members, although I guess they're 12 right now, but they need 7 votes. But I would say that from April 28th, in which they had the term sheet, they had the agreement between the team and the city, and July 15th is ample time. We're talking about, you know, 2.5 months when all is said and done. And I think that what frustrates me is just this idea that the city council can just push it back and they can vote on it in the fall, and that the team's urgency is not their urgency. Well, to get a deal done, it might be. Now, someone suggested to me, don't you think that the city council is just operating in a way in which they're trying to create leverage? They're talking to the team in terms of, hey, we're not in any hurry. You give us a better deal and we'll get to the table and we'll vote on this July 15th. Maybe. I would guess, and Fran, you're not going to like this, of the two groups, I would bet on Josh Harrison, Mitchell Rails, and Mark Ein to know how to kind of negotiate and play this out in public more than the 12 council members, just a guess. But I think the line in the story yesterday that I didn't read when we were talking about this on the air, to me, says it all. Beyond what the mayor, you know, said the team was, which was outraged that they may put this vote off past July 15th, that they were risking and sacrificing an exclusive seat at the table and $2.7 billion in private investment. But there was a line in the story later on that I didn't read from, and I just missed it. But this, to me, is what I insinuated or suggested might be the feeling of, you know, Josh Harris, Mark Ein, Mitch Rails ownership. There's a paragraph that starts, the commander said they would be willing to work, quote, morning and night with the council to get the deal passed in July. Throughout the process, we've been clear. The team has been clear. They need a new home by 2030. Any delay will make us unable to deliver on that timeline, as well as prevent us from attracting major concerts, performers, and international events such as the 2031 FIFA Women's World Cup to DC. So the team is in that roll up your sleeves, we're willing to do it for, you know, days in a row, morning and night, bring the coffee in, we're pounding this thing out, we're getting it done, nobody's leaving the room until it is done. And that is typically the spirit of more private sector than bureaucratic government sector, you know, entrepreneurial environments in which Josh Harris and Mark Ein and Mitchell Rails have thrived in and have been a part of. And I'm sure there's some frustration on their part that we're sitting here on June 17th and there's the discussion among the city council that they're not ready to vote on it and they may push the vote back. These guys probably would have had it done in a week had they been on the other side. That's all I'm suggesting. I could be totally wrong. It could be, Fran, that the city council is so shrewd and they are ready to vote on this and they're ready to vote yes on this by July 15th, but they're trying to create just a little bit more leverage to get just a little bit more out of the deal, get a little bit better of a deal. Whatever that means. I don't know the details of the term sheet. We read it back in April. It's $2.7 billion from the team. It's $1 billion from the city or something north of $1 billion. I just think 2.5 months is ample time. And if they end up pushing it back, it's unfortunate. It doesn't mean the team will walk. Maybe they won't. They want RFK. They want it badly, you know. They want to move forward with the beginning of this project so that they can open the stadium in 2030. By the way, here's another quick email that I read right before the show began. I just thought, and I'll get to the NBA Finals. I know you guys are waiting with bated breath. Kevin from Derek. Kevin, Jaden Daniels needs a running game, period. Every quarterback needs one. Without one, they will go back to being a non-playoff team. You know, we've talked a lot about the need for others to be a part of Washington's run game next year, and we don't want Jaden Daniels leading the team in 10-plus games in rushing. That's probably not the best formula for trying to win 12 games again. Let's not forget that Washington finished last year as the number three rush offense in the NFL. So, Derek, I get it, and I want them to be able to run the football and take the pressure off the quarterback. And, you know, the quarterback had all the pressure on him anyway, even being able to run the football. And I want the 150-plus rushing yards a game to come from a lot more of the others than just, you know, 90 yards from the quarterback and another 60 combined with two or three running backs along with a wide receiver on a fly sweep or a reverse. But they were the number three rush offense in the NFL last year. You know, Baltimore was one, Philly was two, Washington was three. It's interesting. Tampa was four, Green Bay was five, Detroit was six. The top six rush offenses in the NFL last year were all playoff football teams. Yeah, we'll have plenty of time to talk about this leading up to the season. I don't know that we're going to know much until the season starts, but what we do know is that they got better along the offensive line. So that should be a factor in helping the team become an even better rush offense than they were last year. But don't forget, this team ran the football. Yes, with the quarterback a lot of the time, but they rushed the football last year to the tune of the third best rush offense in the NFL. All right, let's talk about NBA Finals Game 5 last night. I was pumped up for the game. I'm going to give you this overarching thought as I watched the game last night. I thought the game was tired and sloppy for a lot of it, unlike the first four games. The intensity was still there. The defensive pressure was still there. But I think if you've watched this series, you can see the physical effect that the intense, in-your-face, full-court pressure defense in each of these games, you can see the effect it is having on both teams. They are both physically worn down a bit. And the game started actually in breathtaking fashion. Both teams were on fire. I think 12 of the first 14 shot attempts were converted. And it looked like maybe we're going to have a night in which offense reigns supreme. But that's not what happened. Both of these teams got back to playing really good defense, Oklahoma City in particular. I've talked about this a lot. Oklahoma City is one of the best defensive teams I've ever watched play basketball, period, at any level. I would say UNLV's college team in 90 and 91 was the best defensive college team I've ever seen. In the NBA playoffs, this Oklahoma City Thunder team are comparable to some of the Bulls defensive teams, some of the Pistons, bad boy teams. They are just so good. And they are so deep. They can play up to 10 guys, and all of them can defend. There just isn't any weakness defensively, and they all can defend any of the five positions. You see Isaiah Hartenstein, a center, out guarding Tyrese Halliburton. Same with Chet Holmgren. They just can guard any position 1 through 5, which makes it very difficult to run offense. But Indiana's proven that they can run offense and they can score even against great defense. It's been one of the compelling features of the series is that we're watching one of the great defensive teams of all time, and yet Indiana's been up to it in a lot of the games. You know, they've been able to score. They've been able to get buckets because they're really good. You know, this series was a series that I thought would be easy for Oklahoma City. I picked them in 5 and said worst case 6. May end up being 6, but it's not the 6 that I thought. I thought they were a much better team. They're not a much better team. These teams are very equal. And even last night, where Oklahoma City seemed like the better team for the majority of the night, it was a two-point game early in the fourth quarter. Indiana just doesn't go away. And they didn't last night. And then when it got to two at 95-93, five of the next seven defensive possessions for Oklahoma City ended with a theft, with a steal. I mean, there was incredible ball pressure. You may say they were ugly turnovers. No, they were defensive forced, and they were called steals. They had 15 steals in the game, five over that three-minute stretch in the fourth quarter where they went from up two to up 14-15. They can throw the D on you like nobody can. And they were so disruptive. Part of it was Tyrese Halliburton's ineffectiveness. I'll get to that in a moment. But you can't talk about last night's game and not talk about Jalen Williams and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. There was a lot of talk about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, as good as he was in game four, and he basically strapped the team to his back offensively in the fourth quarter, brought him back, and they won game four. That was the crucial win for sure. But they talked about that he had zero assists in that game. Well, if you go back and watch that game, he had zero assists because they were 3-for-17 from behind the arc. You know, he should have had 5-6 assists with wide open looks that he created for his teammates. They just didn't make the shots. Last night, they were 14-of-32 from behind the arc, 43.8%. So he ended up with 10 assists. Sometimes it's not, you know, the player that's responsible for his low assist total. It's the players that he passed the ball to that didn't make the wide open shots that he created by collapsing the defense. And I think that was a part of why he had zero assists in game four. They won game four shooting poorly. Last night, they didn't shoot it poorly, and Jalen Williams was outstanding. I've been a bit critical of him at times during this series. I thought his first few games were games in which he was going to have to get better, or they were going to, you know, be in a dogfight. You know, he was in those first two games 11-for-33 from the floor, and he was forcing things. And he had, you know, stretches of those games in which, you know, he'd go to game three, just too many turnovers, ugly turnovers. But last night, his athleticism, his ability to get to the rim with his athleticism, his first step, his explosiveness, his overall ability to close at the rim. I mean, I've felt this watching Oklahoma City throughout the postseason. It's really hard to stop Jalen Williams from getting to the rim if that's what he wants to do without doubling him and forcing him to give it up. I don't think that he's always that great in his ability to see the floor when the defense does crowd him, but when the spacing's right and there is room for him to go downhill, he's borderline unstoppable. He had 40 last night. That's an incredible game five. He was 14-of-25. He was 3-for-5 from behind the arc. He got to the free throw line. He had missed free throws in previous games. He was 9-for-12 last night. Had 6 rebounds, 4 assists, and didn't turn the ball over, you know, last night. Actually, he had 1 turnover. And then Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, SGA, I thought had a bit of a sloppy night at times, especially through the first, you know, second into the third quarter. Had 3 or 4 turnovers that just him trying to squeeze through tight openings. I know he can do it. He brought the ball up against pressure too much last night. They got away from that in game four, and I thought it helped him out a lot. Last night, he was back there, you know, trying to beat full court pressure with the dribble. I don't think he should be doing that. I think they should leave that to Jalen Williams, to Alex Caruso, to anybody else, Dort. He was solid, though. 31-10 in a game five. 4 block shots, by the way, for him as well. And he is deadly getting to the free throw line. He just doesn't miss. He was 13 of 14. You can talk about all the calls that he draws. I mean, these, you go back through the history of time, the best players in the game are really good at getting to the free throw line and drawing fouls. And yes, sometimes getting the benefit of the doubt on whistles. But to me, ultimately, despite 40 from Jalen Williams and 31 from SGA, you know, they combined for 71. It was that moment in the fourth quarter when here comes Indiana. Here they come behind Tyrese Halliburton's replacement. We'll get to that in a moment. And they get a three from Siakam off an offensive rebound with 8.5 to go to make it 95-93. And from that point forward, they went from 95-93 to 112-97. A 15-point lead with five steals defensively over the next seven Indiana possessions. You can talk about bad, you know, passes, panicked, you know, Nembhard and others. That's ball pressure forcing those bad passes that SGA picked off. Alex Caruso gets a steal, you know, on a play in which he turns and he throws it backwards. They were rattled. The defensive pressure rattled them. That's why they turned the ball over. I've said this watching this series and watching Oklahoma City throughout. If your explanation for Indiana, or if your, you know, projection is just don't turn the ball over and you can win, well, yeah, you can say that about anybody. But it's hard not to turn it over against Oklahoma City's defense. They had 23 turnovers last night, unlike game one. When Oklahoma City didn't turn all those turnovers into points, last night, 32 points off 23 turnovers. But of the 23 turnovers, 15 were steals. Steals. Yeah, I could go back and find three or four turnovers that were unforced, but almost the significant majority are forced by Oklahoma City's defense. They're fun to watch, man. If you like watching great defensive basketball, Oklahoma City's an all-time watch. All-time. I think they'll win the series. It's not going to surprise me if Indiana wins Game 6 and we get a Game 7. But OKC was impressive last night. Look, a big story last night was the absolute brutal, I mean brutal, performance by Tyrese Halliburton, a player who's been as clutch as any in the postseason. Many have wanted to anoint him as a superstar. I've pushed back on that. I've said he's a really good player. He's a star player, you know, but he's not at that level of superstar yet. I just haven't seen it, and watching him, there are too many games where you watch him and you're like, where are you? Now, last night, he had a reason for zero field goals made in 34 minutes. We'll get to that when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app. We're also on our YouTube channel. Just hit the subscribe button. Hit the like button when you get there.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, it's NBA Finals. It's the finals, man. I've worked my whole life to be here, and I want to be out there to compete. You know, help my teammates any way I can. You know, I was not great tonight by any means, but, you know, it's not really a thought of mine to not play here. You know, if I, you know, walk, then I want to play. So, you know, they understand that, and, you know, is what it is, and, you know, got to be ready to go for game six.
So Tyrese Halliburton has a sore right calf. That's what he was playing with last night. I guess he had it coming into the game, and then he took a spill in the first quarter. That aggravated it. He left the bench, went back. I guess they put some stuff on it, ice, whatever, came back into the game, and did not play well. It was a brutal performance by their star player. Tyrese Halliburton played 34 minutes. He did not make a shot in the game. He was 0 for 6 from the field. It's not enough shot attempts to begin with. 4 for 4 from the free throw line. Had 4 points. Did have 7 rebounds and 6 assists, but also turned the ball over 3 times. You could see there was no doubt he was compromised. He could not beat anybody off the dribble. He couldn't get around people, and it bogged that offense down. And the real issue for Indiana and for Rick Carlisle, in my opinion, is that TJ McConnell was awesome off the bench in replacement of Halliburton. He's been awesome pretty much for the entirety of the postseason. He's been a very good player in that point guard role, replacing Tyrese Halliburton and playing, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 or so minutes a game. He had 18 points off the bench last night in 22 minutes. 8 of 14 from the floor. 4 assists, 4 rebounds, 2 steals. They were just flat out much better with him in the game than they were with Tyrese Halliburton in the game. They made their run from, at one point, an 18-point deficit to a 2-point deficit in the fourth quarter because of TJ McConnell as much as anybody else. I think Carlisle made a mistake last night. Now, I want to read something. This will bring 13 years ago back to all of us, 12 years ago. Bobby writes, Rick Carlisle pulled a Mike Shanahan last night. He should have pulled Halliburton, but instead left him out there, put him at risk, and they lost the game. A good one, Bobby. Not exactly apples to apples, okay? Not exactly apples to apples. The Indiana coach knew that his player was hurt. The player left the game, got treatment for the injury, and put him out there. Let's not forget that in January of 2013, the quarterback, Robert Griffin III, lied about his injury. Also got, you know, essentially help from the doctor saying that it was not his knee, it was the brace that was making him look lame in the way he was playing. Shanahan had Kirk Cousins ready to go in the second half. But they came out of a closet, the doctor and RG3 did, and they said, no, he's fine. We just had to fix the brace, and now the brace is in a good spot. He's ready to go. Look, in these situations, man, you're never going to get in a championship, you know, one and done. This wasn't one and done last night, but getting close to it. You're not going to pull one of your two best players, maybe your best player, when he insists on playing and you're playing for something. This is not a January regular season game against the Cavaliers. This is game 5, 2-2. Now, I think last night, I think if you're watching and paying attention, they couldn't do anything with Halliburton in the game. They were really struggling. They were playing borderline 4-on-5 offensively. He could not beat anybody off the dribble. He couldn't break down the defense and make plays, make shots. He couldn't get a shot off for much of the night. And TJ McConnell was just playing lights out. It's tough to do, though, man. It's tough for a head coach to look at a guy that's basically been one of the two big reasons you've gotten to where you've gotten to, and he says he's good, he says he's ready to play, the doctors are probably looking at it and saying, you know, it's your call, it's his call, you know, you can go either way. You know, you heard what Halliburton said. You know, it's the finals. I've worked my whole life to be here, and I want to be out there to compete, help my teammates any way I can. I wasn't great by any means, but it's not really a thought of mine not to play here. If I can walk, then I want to play. Many of you would say, well, it's not his job to pull himself from the game. That's on the adult. That's on the head coach to recognize that he wasn't up to it last night. I'm not going to spend any more time comparing it to, you know, January of 2013. Again, you know, they had gotten there largely on the back of Robert Griffin III during the course of the season. And the head coach was essentially, you know, misled in terms of what was going on. Now, a lot of you would say, we saw with our own eyes when they ran that read option and he was dragging his leg to the sideline. Yeah, we did see that. But the doctor said it was the brace. The quarterback said he was fine, lied about it being the brace. We have that video with him telling Trent Williams, don't say anything. I'm hurting bad, but don't say anything. You know, basically he thinks it's something else. Carlisle knew what it was, but it's still hard, man. Carlisle said it was clear that Halliburton wasn't 100%. Doesn't expect him to miss game six. He said he wasn't 100%, but there are a lot of guys in this series that aren't. This is a lifetime opportunity. Not many guys are going to sit, even if they are a little banged up. If you're injured, that's a different story. But we'll evaluate everything with Tyrese and see how he wakes up tomorrow. By the way, according to Genius IQ, some sort of NBA tracking advanced service, Halliburton had six total drives in Game 5, the fewest in a game this postseason and tied for the second fewest in a playoff game in his career. Yeah, he just couldn't get by anybody. He didn't look right. I don't know, maybe he is injured and we'll find that out today rather than just being banged up. But he was awful. He was god-awful. And he cost his team by being out there. There is no doubt about it. So you can look at it and you can criticize Rick Carlisle for not leaving TJ McConnell in there. But you can also recognize that, you know, I'm dancing with the girl who brung me in this situation. And if he's banged up, you know, I still believe that he could pull off some magic here at the end. You know, and yeah. I think that's always a tough call. You know, if literally there's an injury and they can't play and they can't move, that's one thing. He was compromised, no doubt. He was also, even before banged up, when he got banged up later in the first quarter, he didn't start the game well. He looked like it was going to be one of those nights where Halliburton becomes incredibly passive. He's had several of those games in the postseason where he just doesn't look to score. It's odd. You know, game two, he had those meaningless 12 points in a blowout loss. He had 5 points going into the fourth quarter on like six or seven shot attempts. He had a game against the Knicks. It was game five where he had 7 shot attempts and scored 8 points. In the series against Cleveland, he had back-to-back games of 4 points and 11 points where he shot just 8 times in each game. That's just odd. You know, sometimes the defense dictates that, understood, but that's the difference between stars and superstars. Defenses can try to get you to give it up, but a superstar is still going to get his somehow, some way. And Halliburton hasn't done that. I'm not blaming him for the game last night. He was clearly injured. But man, did his presence on the floor hurt his team, especially in that fourth quarter when they got it to within 2. McConnell would have been a better option for them down the stretch. Would they have won the game? I don't know. Oklahoma City's defense, although McConnell seems to be the least fazed by Oklahoma City's defense. He is the epitome of keeping the dribble alive and probing a defense with the dribble. I mean, you see him dribble all around that defense. He starts out on the perimeter. He goes to the wing. He goes to the baseline. He goes up and down the baseline looking to make a play. He's a good player. I think they would have been better off. I still think probably Oklahoma City's defense over those final 8-plus minutes would have been the difference. So here we are, 3-2. We got to wait until Thursday night for Game 6. It's probably best now that I think about it. These teams need these 2 days in between to recover and rest. These games are just, you know, total tug-of-war, you know, slugfests. They have been throughout. I think it's been wildly entertaining to watch. Can't wait for Game 6. The line is a bit short in Game 6. Oklahoma City was a 6.5-point favorite in Game 4. They were a 5.5-point favorite in Game 3. They are just a 4.5-point favorite in Game 6. I think the public's been pounding Indiana in all of these games as an underdog. And now we've seen 3 of the last 4. So we're 3-3, I think, in terms of ATS, Oklahoma City against the spread. I think that's what it is at this point. But 4.5 is the lowest point spread we've seen in this series. But I would bet the public is still going to bet Indiana. They like the Pacers, and they like getting points in these games. All right. Michael Lee will join us from the Post at 11. We'll talk NBA Finals, and we'll look ahead to the draft with him as well. But I want to talk about a story that one of you sent to me yesterday that I read early this morning about Cliff Kingsbury. Really interesting story written about Cliff Kingsbury, and it makes you wonder what this franchise will be if they eventually lose him. That's next.
All right, the Oklahoma City Thunder take a 3-2 lead in the NBA Finals, winning 120-109. The Pacers cut the lead to 2 points in the fourth quarter, and it was all OKC from there with a 21-8 run to close out the game. Jalen Williams put up 40 points on 56% shooting. The Stanley Cup Final is tonight, and the Cup will be in the building. The Panthers are coming home with a chance to close out the Edmonton Oilers. That game will be at 8 p.m. on TNT. And the Nats, they fall to the Rockies after entering the ninth with a 4-3 lead. Kyle Finnegan gives up his first home run of the season to tie the game. Mickey Maniak hits the go-ahead home run. The Nats fall 6-4 and extend their losing streak to 9 games. They continue their series versus the Rockies tonight. First pitch at 6:45, Nats on deck with Charlie and Dave at 6:15 on 106.7 The Fan. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1 and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
MLB.tv is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! Woo! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.tv. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, it's huge. I think you look traditionally through the NFL, the guys who've had a ton of success have been able to stay in those long-term, all-time greats, and just the comfort level, and then you being able to take the ownership of it and understand it inside and out, where now you're correcting people. You don't even need the coaches, and he's kind of getting to that point.
The voice of Cliff Kingsbury. A couple of you sent me a story, a link to a story written by Tyler Dunn of GoLongTD.com. It was a long piece about Cliff Kingsbury. Thanks to those of you who sent it to me. I think Jack and Adam, I think, were the two people that sent it to me. Yeah. I'm going to read from it. I read it early this morning, and it's really interesting, and it speaks to the very, you know, solid possibility that Cliff Kingsbury will be coaching the 2025 season as Washington's offensive coordinator for the final season. And by the way, what they might miss when he's gone. There's some of the stories in here that Tyler Dunn wrote about that we've heard as it relates to Cliff Kingsbury, but I thought it was worth sort of sharing. He writes at the beginning, good hair, it turns out, can backfire. When 6-2 and 10-3 seasons as the Arizona Cardinals head coach went haywire, there was Cliff Kingsbury's undeniable swagger front and center. Lazy narratives took hold. Memories raced back to the scene of Kingsbury's 2020 COVID draft war room. Remember that? When he was, you know, essentially sitting on this white sofa in a beautiful place in Arizona with a beautiful view. And it looked like a GQ photo shoot, Tyler Dunn writes. Losses mounted, he continues. Kingsbury was fired. Conclusions were universally scripted in permanent marker. The coach was universally decried as too soft, to Hollywood for the big leagues. Never mind the fact that the Cardinals were run by one of the worst owners in sports and quarterbacked by a player who, while ridiculously talented, required an infamous homework clause in a contract worth $46 million per year. Yeah, remember when Arizona put in the required sort of take-home work for Kyler Murray into the contract? After getting fired, quote, Kingsbury bought a one-way ticket to Thailand and took a deep breath. I bet he did. In that moment, I immediately thought back, Tyler Dunn writes, to a conversation with one of Kingsbury's former quarterbacks at Texas Tech, a man who knows him extremely well. That man is Nick Shamonic. He backed up Patrick Mahomes before taking over as the starter. We chatted in 2020, and Shamonic couldn't help but steer that conversation about Mahomes back to Kingsbury. There's the obvious upside, the ability to relate to the modern athlete. Shamonic noted that the coach can talk about music, fashion. It was all a far, far cry from where the quarterback's collegiate career began at the University of Iowa. Kirk Ferentz was the exact opposite. He is so old school, so by the book, it's hard to have a true relationship with him unless you're an offensive lineman, Shamonic said. Then came the surprise. Shamonic noted that Kingsbury is old school where it matters most. He'd get to the Texas Tech facility at 3:30 a.m. each morning and wouldn't leave until 8:30 p.m. By the way, that kind of work ethic, we'd have a vote from the city council at this point. He wanted other coaches to arrive by 5 a.m., so he'd stroll in an hour and a half earlier. The common sight was Kingsbury drenched in sweat from a full workout by 4:30 a.m. After this, he'd watch film, conduct meetings, go back to watch film by himself, conduct quarterback meetings, then return for a third round of film. The way he views the game, Shamonic said, is very old school. The way he interacts with players and coaches in the building is very new school. It's a blend of both. He puts the time and effort in, and he's not going to ask anything of anybody that he wouldn't personally do. It can take a while for reality to slay perception, but the NFL world is finally wising up to the real Cliff Kingsbury. As the Washington Commanders offensive coordinator last season, he helped a rookie quarterback take the league by storm. And now this scintillating Jaden Daniels only trails Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, and Joe Burrow in offseason MVP odds. The Commanders scored 28.5 points per game, and new heroes emerged weekly as Daniels led four fourth-quarter comebacks. Surely there are other coaches on the cusp of their own breakthrough season in 2025, too. And then he talks about, you know, Belichick. He talks about Belichick in Cleveland and, you know, basically a reputation getting attached to Belichick is too old school, too, you know, not able to communicate with players. And he relays a story that takes us to a story that was told by Leroy Horde. Remember him? He was a running back and he played for both the Browns and the Ravens back in the 90s, but played for Belichick. And Horde said that Belichick wasn't shy in explaining to us why he believes the best head coach. Oh, I'm sorry. Horde said the best coaches often need time than public scrutiny allows. And he said that Browns players back then were always stunned by Belichick's football acumen. During pregame, Horde told the story of his head coach giving every single one of his players a specific tip about a specific player they'd face that day. Externally, Belichick was the cantankerous dolt who went 6-10, 7-9, 7-9, 11-5, and 5-11 as the Browns head coach from 91 to 95. And became almost a punchline when he left. And then he writes, Kingsbury always had a pinch of Belichick to him. Back in 2003, he was drafted by the Patriots in the sixth round, Cliff Kingsbury was. He never sniffed the field his lone season with the club, but even then, he made his time count. He served as a pseudo-quality control coach, splicing up video all the time for Belichick and Tom Brady. He'd research what teams did on 3rd and 10+, 3rd and medium, 3rd and short. The Patriots won their third of 6 Super Bowls that year. Because he was so bright and he was so brilliant, they wanted him to be involved in some capacity, Shamanic said. The time and energy he's put into it is literally second to none. And then they go on, Tyler Dunn does in this story, to write about, you know, Kingsbury's incredible work ethic and the amount of plays. They talk about that he literally watches every single offensive snap for every NFL team weeks 1 through 17 in the off season to try to learn and try to find things. He at Texas Tech had a trick play called up that he said he got from the New York Jets in week 3 of the NFL's prior season in a game against the Cleveland Browns. He had it as play 46 among all the plays that he went through during that season. His research, Tyler Dunn writes, goes deeper than the NFL, too. On his desk at Texas Tech were stacks upon stacks of yellow legal notepads full of play diagrams. They talk about how he'd pull plays from Bowling Green versus Montana State just as easily as he would from Chiefs Bills. And now, they write, now that he's teamed up with an athlete and a worker in Jaden Daniels, wired the right way, we're seeing the best of a coach who wasn't good enough in Arizona. He's basically implying there that Kingsbury with a quarterback wired the same way and Kyler Murray wasn't, we're now seeing the greatness of Kingsbury. He writes, all a massive credit to Dan Quinn, a Grand Slam hire who built an exceptional staff across the board. And then he finishes it up. Actually, this is where I'm going to finish up reading from his story. You can find it, as I mentioned, at golongtd.com. Fresh off its shocking run to the NFC Championship game, Washington is positioned to realistically compete for a Super Bowl this season. And come 2026, a floundering organization would be wise to give Kingsbury his own second chance as a head coach. He's going to get that chance. I guess he had that chance had he really wanted it at the end of this year. But he wants another year with Jaden Daniels and didn't like necessarily the opportunities that perhaps were there for him. New Orleans as a possibility, maybe the Raiders as a possibility. Remember, the Raiders were on the verge of hiring him to be the offensive coordinator before Dan Quinn got hired here. You know, without Dan Quinn getting hired here, Kingsbury is probably not here either. So you have to consider that, you know, the best combinations tend to be offensive head coaches, quarterbacks, you know, having that combo. Washington has a great head coach. I believe he's a great head coach. He's certainly a very good head coach in Dan Quinn. But Kingsbury was a big part of last year's success because Jaden Daniels was a big part of last year's success. What happens when Kingsbury takes a head coaching job? Well, you know, remember, Washington has really developed a deep coaching staff, you know, and guys that they have in their building right now are, you know, watching Cliff Kingsbury work. That, you know, and they think whether it's a David Blau or whether it is, you know, a Bobby Johnson or a Brian Johnson or an Anthony Lynn who's been a head coach before or a Tavita Pritchard, that they have that replacement in the building. You know, some of you suggested, I remember last summer, they did a great job hiring a staff and they've already hired, this is brilliant, already hired Cliff Kingsbury's replacement. You know, after he has great success in the upcoming season, you know, if he gets a head coaching job, they've got his replacement somewhere in the building. People are very, very bullish and optimistic about David Blau's career. I mean, he is considered to be an up-and-comer, and they kept him in this offseason. I thought it was interesting last year before we saw one snap from an NFL season that people were already talking about the incredible depth they had built out among the staff. But they did. And hopefully when Kingsbury moves on, which seems like at least an even money bet, if they have anywhere near the level of success that they had last year offensively, and I don't know why they wouldn't. Well, they wouldn't if the quarterback gets injured. But Kingsbury will get another shot. I think I said this when they hired Cliff Kingsbury. You know, guys like Scott and Stanford Steve, who know so many college coaches and so many people in college football, I remember both of them, you know, reaching out to me to say, oh my God, Kingsbury, that's an incredible hire. And I'm like, really? People in the business have spoken about Cliff Kingsbury's talent, his creativity, and his work ethic forever, not to mention the fact that everybody likes him and considers him to be a real high-quality guy. We could be looking at the final season of Cliff Kingsbury as the OC. And, you know, as organizations flourish and have success, which we are not used to around here, you know, there are moments, you know, where let's just fast forward. Let's say they do really well in 26. He gets a head coaching job somewhere else. And in 25, they do really well. 26, he's somewhere else, and they're not as good offensively. You end up having those conversations about what they really missed. We're getting ahead of ourselves. But it's a story that I only read from, I don't know, 30% of, that's worth going back and reading. It's golongtd.com, and you can find that story by scrolling down. I'll actually retweet it at some point today. But really good story about Cliff Kingsbury. All right, Michael Lee covers the NBA for the Washington Post. He'll join us next.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game. Like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way. With stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.